I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. America used to be the land of the one-drop rule. It meant if you had one drop of black blood, even if you looked white, you were considered black. It helped perpetuate the system of slavery, among other things. But the one-drop rule also helped shape pre-civil rights black communities where some people were clearly of mixed heritage, but no one called them biracial, even if they had a white parent. Well, things have changed. Today, America has a president-elect who some people call black, some people call biracial, and some people don't know how to label. But do the labels really matter? And why? And how has the entire conversation over multiracial identity shaped culture and politics? We'll start off our conversation today with Lisa Funderburg. Her book, Black, White, Other, was published in 1994, a time when multiracial identity was entering the public debate. She joins us now to help put this dialogue in a historic perspective. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Farai.
So when did the one-drop rule start to erode, and when did people consciously become biracial or multiracial in the way they define themselves?
Well, I think the start of a real public biracial identity came with the baby boom. That was the first generation to profit in terms of attitudes and experiences from the burgeoning civil rights movement, from the increasingly legal recognition of their parents' unions as states overturned the anti-miscegenation laws, and then also from other factors such as World War II vets coming home having seen a different way in which they could be received by the world.
Now, of course, people who are multiracial can be many different combinations,
right,
but your book, Black, White, Other, really was a landmark book, and it collected the stories of 46 adult children of black-white unions. And there was a cultural moment where people were really, people who may not have been personally invested through their family histories were really looking at this issue, as well as people who did have mixed-race families that they came from. So what did you find in your research?
Well, I found that starting with the 1980s, there was a burst of biracial presence, acknowledged mixed race backgrounds in the marketplace and in various forms of culture. You know, maybe nothing did more for a public sense that there are mixed race people out there than A Different World, the spinoff from The Cosby Show that ran from 87 to 93. People like Jennifer Beals in Flashdance, Halle Berry in the 1990s, Lenny Kravitz, Lisa Bonet, those were all people who might have chosen to identify as black, but were not hiding the fact or ashamed of the fact that they had parents from the two different backgrounds.
I remember when I was in college, and that was now 20 years ago, but but there was a lot of discussion on campus about this, and there were some tough moments. Is it an easier time now for people to say, I'm biracial, without people perceiving it as them saying, I'm not black, which has been an issue that comes up again and again? Do you think that's a fair debate to have, whether some people are conflicted about race as well as, you know, trying to run away from something rather than trying to embrace something?
Sure. Well, I think a lot of the conflict between people who identified as mixed race, black, white, biracial, and black was that there was a perception that the mixed race people were trying to define themselves as the colored caste of South Africa, something slightly better and above, maybe closer to white, as if that were a positive value. And that was not well received by many people in the black community. I think what started to shift was that it has become, as I think President-elect Obama demonstrates, this can be an identity that is fluid, that is not denigrating any particular aspect of it, that is proud of all components of its heritage, and that has so much fluidity that Obama, for example, can identify as a black man and as a biracial person without canceling each other out.
You also you've written a new book, Pig Candy, which looked at your father's life in his last years. African-American, grew up in rural Georgia. How did he How do you think he would perceive this moment in history where you do have a black biracial man who's going into the White House, but also these debates over identity?
Well, I think my father would have been thrilled, and a lot of that is informed by his particular background, which is mostly what I was trying to figure out, was who was my father as a man besides just being my father? What was his connection to American history? And he was deeply rooted in the Jim Crow South. He was part of the Great Migration of blacks from the South to the North. He was there pre-civil rights, whereas I was a civil rights baby. And I think he would have called Obama the Jackie Robinson of the White House, which was one of his highest forms of praise for anyone. So I think he would have been proud. And when I went in to vote on Election Day, I felt like he's since passed. I felt like he was with me, and that my grandfather, in fact, was with me, who had been registering voters in 1946 in rural Georgia, which was a perilous thing to do, black voters. And so I think my dad would have been excited and gratified about this new direction. But I also think that he would be glad to see discussions of race elevated, as he would say, from just an emotional level to a more pragmatic level. How can we use this information to advance causes that are important to people in the sort of core areas of their lives?
Well, Lisa, great to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks.
That was Lisa Funderburg, author of Black, White, Other, and most recently the memoir Pig Candy. She joined us from Audio Post Studios in Philadelphia.